The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is the Sunday recap show. Oh, yeah. It's time to get down and dirty and break down every single game from around the NFL in week two with the NFL super friends, Ryan Wilson and John Breach. What's up, fellas?
Yo, yo, yo.
If you want to see what Ryan's luxurious podcast room in the Stamford, Connecticut CBS HQ headquarters looks like, go on over to youtube.com/pick6 and you can watch us on YouTube. You can stream every show there. We post every show to YouTube. And since it's a pandemic and I haven't shaved and, you can always see me in a hat talking to a microphone in my office, if that's what you're into. If you really like it, and this is where I have to ask you for a favor. Everybody who listens to this podcast on the reg, if you like what we do, good news. For a long story, it's a long story, so I'm not going to explain it, but we have a daily NFL show coming to CBS Sports HQ starting today on Monday, September 21st at 4 p.m. Eastern. Myself, John Breach, and Brady Quinn. We'll be breaking down week two on CBS Sports. Did I miss you, Ryan? What did I say?
You said myself, John Breach, and Brady Quinn.
Did I not say Ryan Wilson? I meant all of us. Sorry. And Ryan Wilson. We'll be breaking down all the action from week two. To watch that, it is free. Go to CBS Sports HQ on the CBS Sports app, whether you're on your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, Xbox, whatever it is, or you can go to cbssports.com. Now, the reason I implore you to help us out here, Pete Prisco was in the 4 p.m. slot. We are now taking over the 4 p.m. slot. If we get significantly more viewers than Pete, I will be able to rub it in his face nonstop for several months and potentially years. So everybody go and watch 4 o'clock Eastern p.m. CBS Sports HQ, Pick Six Show. Get a lot of laughs.
I will say that I have noticed that our bosses are basically doing this giant social experiment of how much time can we make Brinson, Wilson, and Breach spend together before they get absolutely sick of each other. It's a fun. It hasn't happened yet, but you know, we're dancing that fine line. It could happen. And Ryan's in a broom closet right now. And you know, he's going to get tired of that and we'll keep working and Brinson will make fun of how I pronounce things. And eventually, birds are going to start laying eggs in Brinson's beard. He's not going to be on TV anymore. It's going to get out of hand eventually, but we are not there yet.
Wait, what do you think? What do you think about poor Debo? He, like, in order to get a promotion, he has to like hear me talk 8 times a week.
That's the true victim in all of this. I mean, forget about Breach and me and you.
It's like a Truman Show situation.
That's right. It's like us living in a house. Like the joke is us living in a house together, seeing which one cracks first. Debo's back there behind the scenes, banging his head against the wall because, you know, he didn't study hard enough in school. And this is what he got stuck doing.
All right. Well, you know, you mentioned Debo's school. He went to Penn State. That's the headliner. It was a rough day for a former Penn State superstar turned New York Giant, Saquon Barkley. Headlines the list of horror. I mean, I feel like, and maybe it's because a lot of them were skill position guys, but it was a horrible day for injuries across the NFL. As exciting and as cool as it was to have NFL football, a golf major, playoff basketball, like very important baseball happening, all those things happening at once, it was still devastating to see all the injuries from around the league. Do we think, and here, let's, Saquon Barkley, the Giants believe a torn ACL out for the season, likely. That's according to most reports. It would be shocking if he plays again this year. The Giants look like they're going to be terrible anyway. Christian McCaffrey banged up his ankle. Devontae Adams suffered a hamstring injury. Jimmy Garoppolo suffered an ankle injury. Raheem Mostert suffered a sprained MCL. By the way, the 49ers players, we'll talk about them in a minute. Drew Lock was knocked out with a right shoulder injury. Nick Bosa, they believe, tore his ACL. Malik Hooker suffered an Achilles injury. Caleb McGarry of the Falcons suffered a knee injury. Solomon Thomas also suffered a knee injury for the 49ers. A lot of those on that turf in MetLife Stadium. Paris Campbell suffered a knee injury and had to be carted off for the Colts after having a semi-breakout week one. Anthony Barr of the Vikings was out with a shoulder injury. Byron Jones out with a groin injury. And Sterling Shepard out with a toe injury. That is just it's not the tip of the iceberg, but that's sort of the headliners there. Guys, do we think that this is a byproduct of the NFL having to play a season without a preseason, without a full offseason, or is this just sort of the cost of doing business for football in general?
I think it's the first thing, but go Wilson.
Yeah. I was going to say, soft tissue injury, sure. Hamstrings, whatever. I mean, yes, Scott Pioli talked about this on Sunday on HQ about how if you have these finely tuned athletes who are used to running and hitting and doing all these things and ramping up to that starting in August with training camp and then preseason, and you don't have preseason, and then you're full speed go. Like the analogy would be you have a Ferrari in the garage and you pull it out in upstate New York in December and just fire it up and start doing donuts. Yeah, it's probably not good for the car. You got to sort of warm up into it. Now the
did Scott Pioli do that?
Of course I came with that. He came with the common sense and I just made it stupid.
Okay. No. I was just curious if you were just completely hijacking Scott Pioli's analogy.
Or a better analogy would be you decide to run a marathon and you only train for 2 weeks. And then when the marathon's over, you're going to be beat up. You're going to be injured, kind of like everyone out.
Or you don't today. Make it through the marathon.
Or we're missing the lead here. Or you're John Breach and you run it in 35 minutes.
That's right.
But John get Breach. Injured.
Yeah. Yeah. Why are you not bragging on yourself? Or is that because
Ryan, if you think about what he just did, he just told you that it was exactly. Almost impossible to run a marathon.
He lied on himself. But right. So
look. It's hard not to.
One thing quickly though, the Achilles stuff, like the tearing your ACL, I don't think that has anything to do with training. It's ligaments and getting like, no, look, Nick Bosa got jacked up.
Didn't see the Bosa injury because I was actively avoiding
it. Saquon Barkley, it was a non-contact injury, I believe.
Saquon got hurt on the play before. It looked like he hyperextended his left arm. Came back out and then went down and grabbed his right knee.
So I don't think the tearing your ACL is usually a freak accident to Kyle Shanahan's point. And we need to find out the details. He mentioned there was new turf at MetLife Stadium.
Diana Rossini of ESPN, tweeted a little while ago that she's been texting with 49ers players who are concerned about how, cause they got to come back and play the Giants next week.
When do they put the turf in? Because the Giants and the Steelers played there and there was no talk of the turf. Doesn't mean it wasn't new. We just didn't hear anything about it. That's all I'm saying.
I doubt they replaced
it. They were on the same turf though. This was the second game played on that turf. So it was just installed before. Yeah. I think theoretically it would have been there for the preseason game. So it would have been four games, two preseason for the Jets, two for the Giants, but that's not where it got broken in. They got broken in that Monday night game. And you know, like you said, there wasn't very many big headlines out of that. So maybe the 49ers were just blaming it on the turf and these injuries would have happened on any turf. I there's not a big enough sample size, I think, to, know what the situation was there, but I do disagree a little bit with Ryan. I think that the injuries did have a lot to do with the fact that, you know, in preseason, if there are games, you can at least start to go full speed. You're not really going 1,000% in practice trying to kill your teammates. You know, you might be going fast 80-90%, but it is hard to go with an edge because you're playing against guys, you know. You don't do that until you get into a game. So, I mean, we've all done it before where you haven't gone for a run for a month or you haven't worked out for a month. All of a sudden, that first run or that first workout, you are sore the next day. Even though you ran a half a mile or did an easy workout, you're still hurting. And so these players are still in their first 2 weeks of going 100%, which they haven't done since last year, since last December. And so I think that does probably play a big factor.
Reach. One thing to say though is that Saquon Barkley wasn't going to play in the preseason. Nick Bosa probably wasn't going to play in the preseason.
They would have played some snaps.
Saquon Barkley would have done the LaDainian Tomlinson, I would have imagined.
Saquon Barkley would have played a couple of series. He probably would have played a series in the first preseason game, maybe.
Okay, fair enough.
And then in the second, but that's sort of the point. He would have built up.
I would just push back on the ligament injuries.
But he never would have been that, because like, he didn't play in the spring either. He had to keep himself in shape during the spring. He would have also had that. So it's a buildup of everything. It's not just not playing preseason games.
Here's what I'll leave you with.
Hold on. Let me ask you this. Do you, cause I do feel like every year there's a week early in the season where it's like, oh, this is the worst injuries we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Do you think that if this had been Deion Lewis and Reggie Bonifant instead of Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey, who suffered injuries, that we would be having this discussion off the top of the podcast?
I mean, that's a great point.
No, I mean, I just. Oh, it's
obviously no. I mean, if it.
Or even if it was just like 15 starting offensive linemen.
Or if it was Jeff Driskel and the backup quarterback, for the Giants. I don't know who that is. I mean, if they just happen to have to play. No. I mean, it's.
So like Tyrod Taylor got hurt and Drew Locke got hurt. If those were the two biggest names that got hurt, I don't know that we're leading with this discussion. But we do need to talk about that. By the way, Eric Armstead tweeted at NFL, fix this trash MetLife turf. 2020 is so whack.
I will say this, and, at what I was going to point out earlier when John kept trying to make points and I keep proving him wrong. I'm the only expert here with ACL history and any sort of,
And you went in to the doctor and said, my buddy Will told me Philip Rivers was healed in 3 months. He's like, yeah, you're not Philip Rivers, pal.
This is also true. But my point is,
wrong.
No,
my
point is this. I don't understand, like ACL injuries happen more often on turf. I don't know why they don't play on grass. Like, why wouldn't you want, like soccer players don't play on turf because it's not good for you. And they all weigh 140 pounds. If you have guys that are between 240 and 320, clearly their bodies aren't built to carry that frame. Why not make it easier for them by playing on grass?
Why don't we get a turf grass management person and dive into that later?
NC State, you should know that.
I feel like grass is easier to maintain in southern cities because you look at like Heinz Field, Ryan, that field always ends up in crappy shape by the time it gets to November. Or FedEx Field or Soldier Field. And so it almost becomes a home field advantage. But once the field's crappy, that's not safe for players either.
Right. Okay.
That's not true, but go ahead.
We will undoubtedly discuss more of these injuries through the
John keeps telling lies. I can't let them go without
facts. Well, what's not true?
Muddy fields aren't bad. They're safer for you than sticky turf, which is what the
RG3 would like a word.
Russell Wilson almost like lost his leg on Levi's Field. I will listen because there was like a muddy hole.
Brinson wants to move on, but you guys can apologize to me next Sunday when I prove you wrong, when I bring my facts. Thank you.
I can't wait till you bring your lawn guy onto the podcast.
This is Steve. He mows my lawn.
He confirms that
we do have to cover 16 games.
Well, quit. Tell Breach to quit lying and you quit backing him up. That's all.
Well, you shouldn't have started with injuries then. Maybe we should have ended with that.
All right.
That was a headline story of the day. Okay. So, 11 teams will begin the season 2-0 because, as we well know, the Raiders and the Saints both undefeated. And so that means they will get to, 2-0. That is tied with 2008, 2006, and 1998 for the most in a single season. And perhaps no team that got to 2-0 was more impressive than the Russell Wilson led Seattle Seahawks, who beat the Patriots 35-30 on Sunday Night Football. The Seahawks covered barely the 4.5. The over 45 hit very easily. Top fantasy performers were Russell Wilson with 42 points, Cam Newton with 35 points, and Julian Edelman with 17 points. Julian Edelman, by the way, would not have predicted this. Set his career high in receiving yards in his second game with Cam Newton. I mean, he played a lot of games with Tom Brady and set very banged up. Tough game for him. I mean, just fought like a warrior. Very impressive. And the Patriots had a chance to win. Edelman barely missed a touchdown catch. And then Cam had it. They had the ball at the one. They ran power quarterback up the middle. 2 seconds left, and Cam was stuffed. Russell Wilson went 21 of 28 with 288 yards and 5 touchdowns plus an interception. He has 9 passing touchdowns this season and 11 incompletions, which is ridiculous. And that sets a Seahawks record for most passing touchdowns in his first two games.
I have a quick question. Are we glossing over that Julian Edelman drop in the end zone? I mean, he should have caught that ball.
Yeah, Cam threw a little high, but he should have caught it.
Julian Edelman catches that ball 9 times out of 10, right?
He was gassed, man. Did you see him when he tried to get up?
I mean, you got to catch it. They win the game if you catch it.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you have any problem with the play call at the end by the Patriots? They ran a QB power run with Cam Newton. initially got a great block, and the Seahawks made a fantastic second surge, flip upended Cam. He didn't even make it back to the line of scrimmage, and the game was over.
I'll just say this, and Breach didn't answer. I think it was a much higher percentage play from the 1 yard line to do the Tom Brady under the center sneak. That thing converts every single time. So that was sort of weird, especially when Cam Newton's your quarterback. But that was my first thought when the play didn't work.
I think it's funny that I feel like this has turned into the Olympics of arguing. Every time the Patriots and Seahawks play, which is like every 4 years, we are arguing about what happened or should have happened on the 1 yard line. And Brent, I think we actually agreed on what the Patriots should have done. I think Cam Newton holding the ball is a high percentage play, but why not run a run pass option? Why not keep the Seahawks defense honest? The Seahawks loaded up the box. They were 100% ready for a Cam Newton run. If you do anything, line up a receiver out there, have someone run a route. I don't care who. And if there is any threat to throw, the Seahawks can't put 11 guys in the box and kill Cam Newton. That's what they did. Cam Newton did not have a chance to score on this play.
I disagree. I think he had a chance to score. I think that the guy who got the fullback took out his knees.
Was that Hill?
Yeah.
42. Yep. It was third safety. He wasn't supposed to be out there because Diggs got kicked out and then, Marquise Blair got hurt.
That's right. Yeah. You can tell Ryan had to watch it at the office, really locked into this game. Yeah.
Laser focus.
I just think that, I think Cam had a chance to score. They've been dominating with that play all night. I understand what they were doing. And look, I thought it was weird. You never see this, but Bill Belichick took off his headset before the play call. He basically was like, look, we're going to run this play. Everybody knows we're going to run this play. Let's find out. Let's see who can execute better.
I'm with Breach. I'm not convinced he had a chance because 42 blew up the play. And then LJ Collier, the first round pick last year, who did absolutely nothing as a rookie, finished up the play and tackled Cam. Whatever, the 2 yard line, whatever that was.
Well, I mean, it's easy to say he never had a chance when he gets stopped. But I mean, like, if you go back and watch it, he very clearly had some lanes. Now, having said that, I still think I would have liked to see the Patriots, as Breach pointed out, like, put a pass option in there.
What about Cam under center?
Yeah, I'd be fine with that too. Cam under center and just sneak it. Cause the other thing is on those sneaks, and this is why the Tom Brady thing is so effective. If you get any kind of push, they are giving you the benefit of the doubt and calling it a touchdown there. I mean, Cam's been awesome. He's got 5 rushing touchdowns in the season. The Patriots offense has looked good. Cam threw for 397. 397?
Yeah.
That's a monster game from Cam.
I mean, if he wasn't playing Russell Wilson, you'd be like, okay, this guy's the MVP because he balled out. Because last week we're like, oh, he can only run the ball and they're going to get him killed. This is going to change week to week. And they, I mean, seriously, Russell Wilson was the reason they lost that game because there is no answer for Russell Wilson. We know the Patriots defense is really good. DK Metcalf was going after it with Steph Gilmore, which is fun to watch.
He typically stroked him on that touchdown catch.
Typically guys don't go after Steph Gilmore like that. So that was fun to watch. But every single time, in fact, the biggest liability on that Seahawks offense, Greg Olsen. I mean, he was playing volleyball with the first pass that ended up being a pick six.
Yep.
And I think we should give Russell that touchdown. That should count as a touchdown for Russell because it was such a terrible
at least not as an interception, right?
Not as an interception and completion. But, yeah, I mean.
By the way, Russell, 5 touchdowns of 5 different receivers. That's kind of crazy.
No, 6-6. I'm counting that interception.
Okay, including the McCourty.
I'm not sure which one. Do you think the 30 other general managers are wishing on some level they signed Cam Newton? Just to avoid
at least, I mean – I said it last week, like, why, how do we screw up and let Bill Belichick get Cam Newton? How do we do that? He goes 20 years of Tom Brady and he gets Cam Newton. And I mean, I do think that in this, I don't think it's 30 other general managers because Cam only wanted to go somewhere where he had an opportunity to earn the starting job, like a legitimate opportunity. You know, he didn't want to go play in Miami and where they're like, Los Angeles, where they're like, well, listen, we got Justin Herbert. So if this doesn't start out well, you know, we're going with Herbert and we'll get to him in a second. But yeah, I mean, the Patriots, if Cam plays like this, he was dealing. He was cooking in the pass game. He looked awesome. I heard Chris Collinsworth say it afterwards and I don't know that I entirely agree, but I don't know that I entirely disagree. This may be the best Cam has ever looked as a passer. It's pretty remarkable what happens when it's not Mike Shula calling his plays.
Yeah. I mean, this is obviously that Cam has adjusted very well and very quickly. I think that's the most surprising part. Look, the Patriots are a brilliant coaching staff. I don't think anyone would ever argue that. So it was just a matter of, can Cam Newton go in there with no preseason games, learn this offense in 1 month when he was literally on Instagram in July calling it calculus? Like, oh my God, how am I ever going to learn this? His offense is impossible. Which is probably just reverse psychology. And he comes in there and he's already running it like this. If you're the Patriots, you're thrilled. Your second game with Cam Newton and you almost beat the Seahawks in a game you probably should have lost and you did, but you almost won. I thought the most interesting call in this entire game, and it would be talked way more about if the Patriots would have scored and won, was
the third down call by Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson.
Third and one. The Seahawks had the ball at their own 31-yard line. There's a minute 55 left just on the two-minute warning. If you get the first down there, it's game over. And for some reason, Russell Wilson is throwing bombs to Tyler Lockett in that play. I mean, I understand you've had a great game, Russell Wilson, but that is how, you know, you lose your MVP votes, is that nobody remembers the five touchdown passes if you lose the game. And that's almost what happened because they didn't get this third and one.
Breach. Brinson tweeted this out. I want to see him backtrack now. I'm sure he won't, because I actually agree with him. Russell Wilson is the best deep ball thrower in the NFL.
I don't disagree with that at all. That's a fact. Like, he's got a great deep ball. I don't think you throw a deep ball on third and one with under two minutes left. On that,
I was watching the game, and I've got like a, you know, for Sunday night.
You got three televisions in your face.
I just got two, but one's on the HD antenna, so it's like a lot faster. And I saw something like Pete Carroll called the timeout right before the third down. Right, they had third and one, and he called one of his timeouts. So I was like. And you could see him talking. And so when it popped up on the second TV on the replay, he used the words, if you have a shot, take it, or something to that effect. I was like, no way. I was like, are they going to try and throw downfield on third and one? I was like, I must have just seen it wrong, but he used the phrase shot. He was talking on his headset. He was talking to Pete. He was talking to Russell, I think. And then they got a bad snap, but on that play call, why would you not roll Russell out? Sort of like, you know, give him the opportunity to run if it's there, to sneak it. And then if not, have Tyler Lockett running a crossing route. Those things have been open all friggin' night. And instead you take this deep shot down the field that, you know, look, is a kill shot if you hit it. And it's huge.
A 1 yard run is a kill shot. That's the difference.
The game's
though.
Over. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You don't need a 45 yard pass. Literally a 1 yard run is a kill shot.
Rich,
so
you're right. But I actually appreciate the aggressiveness because I love living in a world where Brian Schottenheimer opens up this offense and Russell has thrown the ball 34 times last week. I think 20 something times on Sunday night. It's a completely different offense. He was crushing it with the deep ball.
He was 3-3 on plays or passes over 20 yards prior to that.
But I mean, if you run the ball, no one's going to get angry at you for that.
Listening to Brinson talk about the footage, it sounds like Pete and Russ kind of elbowed Brian out of the huddle for that third and one play and said, you know, let's just do whatever the heck we want. Well, the other reason is if you run it and you don't get it, the Patriots have to use a timeout. Which they also did not have to do. And the fact that they went on that final drive with two timeouts ended up being huge because they used both of them and got down there with 2 seconds left. They would have changed their play calling. It would have changed the whole complexity of that final drive if they only had one timeout. So,
by the way, the Patriots, I thought, should have used that timeout sooner. I didn't like they Cam completed down to the 9 yard line, I think, to Edelman, and they didn't call a timeout. And it melted about 16 seconds off the clock. Now, it ended up being beneficial because they threw down to the 1 yard line and they were able to call a timeout then and run one more play. But I think they would have gotten up there and spiked it anyway. Or frankly, like in that situation, you know, when they got it down to the one, if they'd had like 10 seconds left, you could almost run up and instead of spiking it, just have Cam dive over the line with the Seahawks in their pass defense, because Seattle was able to call timeout and get as many big guys as they wanted in attack. And the reality of the situation for Seattle with their offense, and I know they got a big defensive stop, Russ is going to have to cook all season long if they want to win the division.
Hey, let me ask you, what is this Russ Cook stuff? I know what it means, but where'd it come from?
Seahawks Twitter, which
he's got a new cooking show on the Food Network.
Yeah, which is like a psychedelic mushroom cult.
I was like the old man in the office going, "What does Russ let Russ cook mean?" I sound like Fresco.
Are you serious?
I know what it means. Where'd it come from?
Obviously, all the fans want to see him throw more passes, and that turned into let Russ cook.
Okay,
it basically went viral on Seahawks Twitter.
I got the context clues. I just didn't know if there was a.
The dark underground that is the Seahawks Twitter. Wilson, you don't even want to go on a Seahawks Twitter. You wouldn't last for 3 days.
We wouldn't last for 30 minutes.
Yeah. You wouldn't last for 3 minutes.
What is Cable Tanner's doing?
So here's one of my takeaways, and we can move on because I know we always linger on the first game, but I'll just say this quickly. DK Metcalf, awesome. N'Keal Harry, less so. I mean, N'Keal Harry is the biggest wide receiver I've seen fall down every time he gets touched. That was my takeaway, one of my takeaways from the young wide receivers in this game.
I mean, it is tough because like DK Metcalf was a lock for the top 10.
And then he ran a terrible three cone because he, yeah.
Let's see. I'm just trying to look at the players.
And by the way, I'll just say while Brenton is looking that I thought the Seahawks played an A-plus game. The only thing I brought up was that third and one. So I feel bad bringing up the one bad decision I thought they made because I thought that was a well-called game. I thought that was a well-played game. And the Seahawks offense has looked pretty unstoppable for the past 2 weeks. I'm not sure with Russell Wilson at quarterback, I'm not sure if there's a defense in the NFL that can slow them down.
No, if they let Russ cook, they're going to be good for the entire season. By the way,
I'm going to start a let Russ saute. That's my thing.
That's terrible. So Marquise Brown, N'Keal Harry, Deebo Samuel, AJ Brown, N'Keal Harry, ignore Marquise Brown. N'Keal Harry was taken with the 32nd pick of the 2019 NFL draft. Here are the wide receivers selected after him. Deebo Samuel, who, by the way, would have been a perfect fit in the Patriots offense, and it's inexplicable they didn't draft him. And I had mock drafted every single time to him at 32. AJ Brown, Mecole Hardman, JJ Arcega Whiteside, Paris Campbell, Andy Isabella, DK Metcalf, Deontay Johnson, and then Jalen Hurd and Terry McLaurin. Yikes, Pats.
Right. Yeah. Not great.
Yeah. And all those guys went in the second or third round. Then Hakeem Butler went to the top of the first.
You guys ready for my fun fact?
Sure. I am braced and ready.
The final score of this game was 35-30. That final score has only happened 11 times in NFL history. It happened twice in week two. Patriots Seahawks and Bengals Browns.
I covered both those games, which is a great time to mention that I went 13-2 this week.
Which is interesting.
Oh yeah, Wilson, by the way, 13-2 against the spread. That is
What was your note about people didn't want to talk to me? I didn't know what that meant.
Huh? Oh, I was saying they kicked you off HQ because you're too smart. Like, you're too brilliant.
I didn't see that part. Okay.
You can't be on the show.
Anyway, the Pats and Seahawks are both good. We're going to be talking about them a lot. So let's get to the Chiefs and Chargers. Chiefs 23, Chargers 20. Chiefs win in overtime. I was hanging out watching that game on Twitch with Adam Azer. The Chargers cover the +8.5, obviously. The under 47, I won't say it easily hit, but it was a little dicey there for a minute. I guess it could have gotten spoiled in overtime. We told you to take that under on the YouTube exclusive week two look ahead. You can go to youtube.com/pick6 and get the week three look ahead with John Breach and I that we record on Sunday night. Top fantasy performers, Patrick Mahomes, 29, Justin Herbert, 23, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, 15 each. And, the Herbert thing is interesting because Tyrod Taylor suffered an injury. Was it before the game?
So pregame, he went through right around the coin toss. Apparently he had a chest injury, quote unquote.
Oh, here it is. They issued a statement. Prior to kickoff, Tyrod Taylor experienced difficulty breathing and was taken to the locker room for evaluation. He was transported to the hospital shortly thereafter to undergo further evaluation. Tyrod has since been discharged from the hospital. Wow. I didn't know that. Herbert said later he found out about 10 or 15 minutes before kickoff, maybe.
Maybe less. I mean, there was not a lot of time because everyone was sort of surprised. You turned on the television and you're like, well, 14 and a half minutes and Justin Herbert's out there.
Well, we were firing up the Twitch stream and I look up and it's like, why is Justin Herbert? Right. Yeah. I mean, it was just crazy. And so, Herbert, look, I was not high on Herbert coming into the draft.
No
you
one
either, right?
No.
Pete Prisco was.
Prisco, of course he was.
And Pete was texting me like, oh, what do you think about Justin Herbert now? What are you doing? It's a fun game.
Why are you talking like that, Pete?
Herbert played well. He had a good game.
You're selling him short. He absolutely balled out. And I think part of it, so here's my theory. Part of it is he had no time to be nervous.
Yep.
He was putting on his hat, grabbing the clipboard, and he's going to go sit down and watch a nice little game. And Anthony Lynn's like, yo, put your helmet on. Okay. And he goes out there and he is dealing. He made one of the best throws of the weekend, I think, yes, to Keenan Allen.
An absolute strike down the field.
And these are the throws you saw every five or six throws at Oregon and then four throws that made you pull your hair out if you had hair. But the only mistake he had was that interception. It was a terrible decision in the middle of the field, double coverage. He could have run for the first down. And he just threw it up there.
Second and two, and he was like he was about to waltz to a first down and just chunked it down the field. Awful, awful decision.
Get into the fourth quarter, and that was the only concern I had. But I give him a lot of credit, and we heard Anthony Lynn say afterwards that if Tyrod's healthy, he will remain the starter. We'll see how long that lasts. I do wonder if part of the reason he said that is because he's seen enough of Justin Herbert in practice, and of course we haven't in the preseason games, that he knows that if Justin goes two or three games and just stinks it up, then everyone's having the conversation, okay, when does he pull him for Tyrod? You don't want to hurt his feelings and all that.
Or this is like when Hugh Jackson was saying, yes, no, Baker Mayfield's not going to be our starter. Tyrod Taylor is going to keep the job. Don't worry, guys. And then after he gets mocked on the national scene, because we all just saw what we saw, yeah, there's no way you can put Tyrod Taylor back in there after what happened in this game. And even though I do agree with your assessment of the game, Ryan, I just feel like that one mistake was such a big backbreaker. I mean, you can't like underplay it. That cost them the game because it was.
Let me ask you this, John. What was the score? 17-17?
It was 17-9 at that point.
Okay.
They were at the Chiefs 39-yard line. If he gets a first down there, at minimum, you're in field goal range. So all of a sudden, you're up two scores in the fourth quarter versus only being up one score in the fourth quarter, which obviously against the Chiefs offense is a huge, huge difference. And that was it. So, I mean, I thought after that pick happened, I was convinced the Chiefs were going to win. And I wasn't so sure because the Chargers were driving up and down the field pretty easily.
I felt the exact same way. But let me ask both of you this. So 17-17, the Chargers drive, and then the drive stalls fourth. I think it's fourth and goal from the three, maybe a little further out. I was saying they should go for it. There's no reason to kick a field goal. All you're doing is giving Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes 4 minutes, however much time's left, to come down there and beat you.
Or how about an overtime? And they got fourth and one, and Anthony Lynn punts it to Patrick Mahomes. Like, he's not going to take the ball and go beat you, bro.
And you look across the field, and Andy Reid and his new windshield wipers are going for it every time on fourth down. I don't want to still breach his thunder, though, because that was some of the best kicking I've ever seen in my life, John Breach.
My God, Harrison Butker. Well, before I get to that, I'm going to touch on your point real quick on the field goal. It was fourth and goal from the 5-yard line. The Chargers.
Go for it.
The Chargers it was 17-17.
You have to kick that thing.
Because there was 2:27 left, and the Chargers defense had done pretty well against the Chiefs up to that point.
They get the ball at the 5-yard or the 7-yard line then, and then they have to drive even further.
Yeah, then it's just like overtime where they have to drive down and get a field goal, and Harrison Butker proved he can make it from 65 yards. So the Chiefs would have had to go like 40 yards to kick a game-winning field goal versus now they have to get a touchdown if they want to win. And if they get a field goal, you're over. Like, I understand why a touchdown makes sense, but I feel like under 3 minutes left, you have a chance to take the lead. You got to do it, especially when your defense has been playing so well against Patrick Mahomes.
I don't know.
I also think, Ryan, that you're, and I don't disagree with the mentality that you're espousing, but I think it's sort of the mentality of like an FCS team going into like Oregon. And you got them on the ropes. You're like, we got to put them, we got to just pull everything. And I don't think that's how the Chargers, and maybe it's how they should be operating, but I don't think that's how Anthony Lynn and the Chargers are operating.
I don't know what the analytics folks think either.
Now I do agree with you guys though on the fourth and one from the 34.
Fourth and one in the overtime was horrendous.
You go for it. You don't let Patrick Mahomes touch the ball.
Cowardly. Like, all they had to do is get a field goal. Do you really think you're shutting him down after you saw the way that they sort of like rose up and got moving? I mean, the Chiefs had multiple chances to win that too. They didn't play very well. Does that concern you at all about the Chiefs moving forward, or is that just sort of an anomaly? Well,
before Breach gets to Buckner's heroics, I will say this. Someone was asking is this a blueprint for how to beat the Chiefs? And the answer is yes, if you draft Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, because they were crushing fools. So other than that, and by the way, we were all concerned about Derwin James not being there. He obviously helps in this game, but they are still with those edge rushers able to get after it.
For sure. You know what's weird? How did they not move the ball against Cincinnati? How is that possible?
I was texting is that the Chargers just didn't show anything against the Bengals. They knew it's the Bengals. We're going to keep a vanilla offense. We don't want to show the Chiefs anything because that team's actually going to give us some competition. If we want to be able to beat Kansas City.
But they had a different quarterback.
We're going to treat this like a preseason game. Well, that's the other thing is that the Chiefs weren't watching film on Justin Herbert. So the Chargers had that kind of element of surprise. So I think there was a couple things. I think the Chargers played the best they possibly could. The Chiefs played like a C-minus game. And they still won. So if you're Kansas City, I don't think this shows how to stop them. And as Ryan said, no one else has two pass rushers like that up front. They can just get after Mahomes on every single play. So, you know, I don't think the Ravens are going to sit watching this film thinking, hey, you know what? We're going to hold them to 23. We got it figured out.
What, all right. So talk to me about, 169 yards worth of game winning field goals. Cause Harrison Butker, who, by the way, great dude from Georgia Tech, very nice fella. He goes out there to kick a 53 yarder. He is. I've talked to him.
I know. No one cares. Just let me moment.
He's out there, kick a 53 yarder, buries it. Chiefs are called for a false start. Has to go, or like an illegal formation or something. Has to go back out. Start.
And the poor guy who did it raised his hand. Like, yeah, we know it's you, Chubby. Just do your job.
They announced the number, pal. You don't need to tell us. Then he goes out there. He's got to kick a 58-yarder. Now, bear in mind, he's already made a 58-yarder in the game. He stripes the living crap out of it, buries it. But Anthony Lynn has called a timeout, so he has to go back out and kick a third kick from 58 yards. Breach, what was going through your mind as that's happening? And do you think that, I mean, obviously it's harder to make three than it is one, but how do you, you know, like, what is the difficulty percentage? Does it go up? Does it, like, does the pressure off because you know you can make it? Like, where, how does that all shake out?
Well, first, let me just say that this was like field goal kicking porn to me. I have this on my DVR. Once we're done recording this podcast, I'll probably watch it multiple times before I go to bed and just admire how well Harrison Butker handled that situation. Cause this is just, like right before the half.
Just so we're clear, you're going to watch a bunch of porn multiple times before you go to bed.
Field goals.
Porn.
Okay. Prince, my God.
FGP. It's a
family podcast. Wilson just said that. Good
multiple,
Lord.
Multiple times, huh?
But here is the thing about what he did. Like, it's hard to put into perspective how good this was, but I will say it was the second longest field goal game winner in OT. I think ever. The longest was a 59-yarder. So that tells you that this doesn't happen. This rarely ever happens. And the fact that he did it three times, it really felt like after the penalty, Andy Reid thought about sending the offense back out there for a second. Like, oh, because if he does miss, all of a sudden the Chargers only about 15 yards from being in field goal range themselves. But I think after he hit the 53-yarder so well, that as weird as this sounds, when you're back that far, if you're a kicker, once you hit it the first time, your confidence shoots up to 100%. So if he was nervous at all trying it, once he makes that, it's a walk in the park. Then you hit a 58-yarder again.
Hold on, Brito, but after the 53-yarder, you're super confident, and then the guy gets called for false start. Where does that, if you were 75% confidence, the false start brings it down some, I would imagine, because this guy just blew the chance to win the game.
You're definitely annoyed at your player, but he hit it so well and he made it so easily. And I think the fact that he had already hit that 58-yarder earlier in the game, like Harrison Butker was not being phased at all here. I don't think I've ever seen a guy hit two 58-yard field goals in a game.
Fewer.
Three, if we count the one that got called back. So,
yeah. I mean, and I felt like he could move back 20 more yards and still smoked it.
He should have just done it just so he could set the NFL record for longest kick. But yeah, it was highly impressive, and I do not think we will see a kicker hit two 58-yard field goals in a game, including a game winner for the rest of the season.
How about three 58-yard field goals in a game?
Yeah, three 58-yarders. I mean, it was crazy.
Is he the second best kicker behind Tucker now?
Yeah, who else is it?
If you read my top 10 kicker rankings from July,
I did not read your top 10.
The only tweet that went out with top 10 lists that got zero retweets.
Incredible. All right, moving along. Hey, we did a podcast on top kickers. Oh my God.
We did. You were the host of it.
I hosted it. That's right. I guess I.
Oh boy.
I don't remember anything. All right. Oh, I know. I was going to say that, Justin Herbert, by the way, 311 passing yards with one touchdown and a rushing touchdown joins Otto Graham in 1950 and Cam Newton in 2011 as the only players in NFL history with at least 300 passing yards and a rushing touchdown in their first career game in NFL history.
The only quarterback to score a passing and rushing touchdown in the first half since 1954 when the Giants' Bob Clatterbuck did it. I heard that tweet about, I mean, I've heard that stat about 59.
I did not think I would hear Bob Clatterbuck's name today.
Yeah. Oh, Saturday is a much more likely time to hear it. All right. What's next?
I know Debo is like the one manipulating Ryan to have to go to Connecticut every week because Ryan's like podcast, like your podcast game goes up.
Oh, why? Oh, cause I stare at stats all day. And then that's
you're just like, you're sitting in that room with the, like with Rob and Riley and you're just like, you have nine TVs on. So you're just all soaking in the football as opposed to like, you know, you're at home and like your wife is like, what do you want for lunch? And your kids want to bug you. Cowboys, Falcons.
Oh my God.
Cowboys 40, Falcons 39.
What are we
Falcons doing? Plus three covers. And so does the over 53.5. And by the way, back to back weeks, the Pick Six podcast parlay. Cash it. Back to back weeks. Didn't bet it. What is the matter with me? I guess I just stopped betting it. We'll just keep it.
There's more the matter with Dan Quinn than there is the matter with you.
That is true. Dak Prescott was the top fantasy performer, 41 points. He had three rushing touchdowns, one passing. Matt Ryan, 35 points. And Calvin Ridley, 22 points. Dak Prescott passed for 450 yards with one touchdown and rushed for three. As I said, he's the first player in NFL history with at least 400 passing yards, three rushing touchdowns in a single game ever.
By the way, if Cam Newton had scored, he would have been 3 yards off tying that. Second player to do it in the same day, and then never happened before.
That's a great point, Ryan. So,
Eric Casillas made that point originally, but I mean, it's worth following up on.
That is great. The Cowboys are the third team in the past 15 seasons to overcome a two-score deficit in the final 2 minutes and win in regulation, joining the Pats on from 2013 against the Browns and the Chargers back then in San Diego in 2008 against the Chiefs. And they were aided. Boy, what a special teams dance party for Breach. They were aided by an onside kick that you wrote about, Breach, and it was ultimately disastrous.
Mm. What were the Falcons doing? I have no, I don't know. So one of two things happened on this onside kick. Either the Falcons players on the field did not know the rules of the onside kick, which is the fault of the coaches, or they did know the rules and they didn't fall on the ball, which I think is also the fault of the coaches. Cause if you're not practicing that, I don't know what either way, it is not a good look for the Falcons. Cause this literally cost you the game. And for anybody who has not seen a replay of this onside kick, I implore you to stop whatever you're doing right now. Google Cowboys onside kick and watch this total disaster unfold before your eyes. So what we have, Greg Zuerlein kicks the onside kick and it was a great kick. However, it was a slow roller. And so the kickoff is from the 35-yard line. The Cowboys cannot touch it until it goes 10 yards, which means they cannot touch it until it goes to the 45-yard line. The ball is slowly rolling from the 40, the 41, the 42, the 43. The Falcons have five guys over by the football. They can jump on it at any point between the 40 and the 45. No one does it. And so as soon as the ball hits the 45, a Cowboys player jumps on it, and the Falcons are just standing around like, well, my God, what happened? And we all saw what happened. The Cowboys recovered it. The Falcons just, they blew this game. I give all the credit to the Falcons for blowing it instead of the Cowboys for coming back, because that just never should have happened. That kick never should have been recovered, and it was absolutely embarrassing.
What did Dan Quinn say after the game? I haven't seen the quotes, but I saw him mouthing something on the screen.
What were they doing?
Have you not seen it till just now?
I guess I was watching it, but like, I don't think I fully realized what.
So you were watching it like you were a member of the Falcons special teams. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, this is unbelievable.
This is the thing. Like, if you saw this happen in like Pee Wee football, you're bringing the kid over and you're giving him an earful about, dude, this is day one stuff. You see the football, you jump on it. It's pretty simple.
I guess it looks like the Falcons are sort of trying to, that nobody wants to jump on it and like,
there's no, that guy who touches it and then the Cowboys recover it. Cause as soon as the Falcons touch it, it's a live ball. Yeah. But
it's going to be live anyway once it gets 10 yards past the line of scrimmage.
This is wild, wild stuff. I mean, they were gifted this. I mean, it's a Dan Quinn was asked about it afterwards.
What is,
you know, obviously people are going to ask about it. And, he said that, I told the team there has to be a lesson in that loss. We'll work into that as we put the preparation next week, but that one definitely stings. And when, as Breach wrote about it, he was asked about it, on his, he said, when he asked if his team knew the rules, I missed that.
Yeah. And he said they did.
Yeah. He said that his players did know the rules, but.
But what happened?
Yeah. What? Dan Quinn says his players have, quote, got to capture, end quote, that slow rolling onside kick, says the players know they can get the ball before 10 yards. So I don't know that he necessarily said they knew the rules.
What does got to capture mean? Is that a fancy way of saying they need to pick the ball up?
I think that's dancing around the fact that you can't say our guys had no idea what they were doing because we didn't coach them.
All right. Here's a question for you. Is that an on the spot fireable offense? I'm not kidding.
I think there's got to be a fall guy. I mean, maybe you fire the special teams coordinator. But that is as bad as it gets because there's no reason. You're the Falcons. You're 0-2 now in a game you should have won on the road that you were winning 20-0 after one quarter. And that's
hey, by the way, Dan Quinn, they're up 20-0. The Cowboys score to make it 20-7. The Falcons then go back and score again. So it's 26-7. And Dan Quinn goes for two. Why did he do that? I understand you want to make it three touchdowns, but why did you do it? It is so early and you have a huge lead. And they lost by one. They didn't get it, obviously. They lost by one.
Yeah, I thought that was a little weird also. You know, it's like, how would you feel to be a Falcons fan right now? Literally, the past, since we've been doing this, I think we've all worked together covering the NFL since 2013. And like, I can only name three games in my head where a team has blown a lead of 20 points or more. And it's all Falcons games. It's literally all Falcons games. It's Super Bowl 51, obviously. Yeah. It is this game and it is a game in London against the Lions. I think in 2014, they were up 21-0 at halftime and they lost 22-21. Like, how could any other team do this? Nobody shoots themselves in the foot better than the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah.
Sort of lost in the mix. CeeDee Lamb led the Cowboys in receptions. 6 for 106. Just a matter of time. Keep an eye on old CeeDee.
It's not a matter of time. He's just here.
Yeah.
They just have three number one wide receivers. The Cowboys play the Seahawks this coming week. Take the over. Seahawks defense stinks. Cowboys defense stinks. And those teams can score. It's going to have to be like 58, and that's still not high enough.
-3.5 is what I saw, I think, at the early line.
Not a total.
No, I'm saying that line is -3.5. You mean the over-under is at 3.5 points? I'll take the under.
You should want the over there. Look, Dallas, Dak's probably not in the MVP top five, excuse me, right now, but.
Uh-oh. Yeah, all right.
You're good. anyway.
So we talked about, okay, the Falcons are who they are. What's Jerry thinking in between cheering for the victory there about the dollar signs he's having to pay Dak Prescott?
I mean, yeah, you got to pay him.
I feel like it went up about $2 million with every touchdown run that Dak had.
Oh, well, is there a scenario where they're not going to pay him?
No.
Andy Dalton did come in. I know Breach was cheering that up.
I was hoping he was going to score a touchdown. I was at the edge of my seat hoping that Andy Dalton would score a touchdown.
There's no chance they're not going to pay Dak Prescott. Jerry found him in the middle of the draft.
All right.
What about Mike McCarthy? Because
if they lost that game,
two punts in his own on his own side of the field with like a offense that cost $200 million.
You can't lose that game. And the good news for him is if he had lost that game, that is a huge problem for Mike McCarthy.
He was going to be the talk of sports media and radio this week.
Well, and the second fake punt was the worst one because it was 4th and 5 in the fourth quarter. The Cowboys are trailing 36-24. Every single person on the field is expecting a fake punt. The 12,000 fans that were there were expecting a fake punt and the Cowboys ran a fake punt. Oh, and surprise, surprise. They got stopped on it's not even a fake punt in the fourth quarter. If you're down 12, you're just going for it with your punt team on the field because everyone knows it's there and it blew up in your face. I would say McCarthy gets like a C coaching grade. Basically, Dak Prescott saved the Cowboys season, saved McCarthy from being on the hot seat after 2 weeks. Jerry Jones just cut him a check right now.
Ryan, would you like to accuse me of stealing your jokes for Twitter? I know you liked my tweet when I said Mike McCarthy's idea of analytics is just doing the opposite of what Jason Garrett did.
Oh, no, that was, I give you that. That's originality on your part. I like that.
But like, that really is what he's doing.
Yeah.
No, Jason Garrett would never fake a punt here. Let's fake some punts. I mean, it's insane.
I feel like Mike McCarthy is at his wit's end of what to do. And he's on the second week on the job. He's Homer Simpson in the nuclear with the nuclear codes. He's like, I don't know. I'll just hit this button and see what happens.
The Cowboys were 0-2 on fourth down as well. But Dallas 1-1 now, Falcons 0-2.
Here's a quick fun fact for the Falcons. In NFL history, teams were 440 and zero losses.
Great.
When getting 39 points and zero turnovers. The Falcons just handed the NFL its first loss ever.
Dan Quinn needs to bring that to his next contract negotiation.
Yeah, I don't think Dan Quinn's going to be long for that job. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll rip through the rest of the games.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. I wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
All right, so those are the big games out of the way. Let's rip through some of the other games that mattered. I don't know why this one's been redacted from the rundown, but it looks like it's Rams 37, Eagles 19. The winning bet's the Rams plus two and the over 46. Jared Goff, 26 points. Tyler Higbee, 23 points with three receiving touchdowns. And Daryl Henderson, 18 points. The NFC West is all 2-0 after the Rams snuffed out the Eagles. The Eagles had a chance to tie the game up, and Carson Wentz threw a horrific end zone interception. The Eagles, the 49ers are 1-1. I'm an idiot. Wait, are the 49ers 1-1?
Yeah, they lost. Week one, Cardinals.
Oh, right. Well, you can't, you know, the undefeated outside the division.
Fair enough. Yeah, I didn't watch much of this game, but I did see the Carson Wentz interception, and I thought
somebody tweeted that everybody was 2-0.
Well, do your own research.
Brenton, that's why you don't believe everything you read on Twitter.
It was a reputable.
You're Ron Burgundy right now, reading everything in the teleprompter.
So, you know, one of my takeaways from this game, and I want to hear what Debo has to say. Like I said, I didn't watch a lot of it, but overarching takeaway is that Jared Goff is a better quarterback than Carson Wentz, and we, for the longest time, myself anyway, at least dog
here. Take.
Jared Goff played like crap at the end of the 2018 campaign when they ran to the Super Bowl. Didn't play well last year. And I feel like both he and Sean McVay had a chip on their shoulder coming into this. They played well week one. They put up some numbers week two. They're not making the mistakes that we're seeing Carson Wentz. I mean, granted, there's a ton of injuries on the Eagles team. I get that. But some of the decisions Carson Wentz are making, holding on to the ball too long last week, forcing some throws this week. I just feel like Jared Goff's playing better. I don't think that's even a hot take.
I think it's fair to say that he's playing better this season. I wouldn't say he's a better quarterback. If that was the case, then I think you'd have about 6,000 quarterbacks in the world better than Kirk Cousins. So I'm not going to be a prisoner of the moment and say that he's overall a better quarterback. He's had a better start to the season. But, yeah, Carson has to play better.
I think that's fair. I do think if you're putting Carson Wentz's career – production up against Jared Goff, so they're pretty close.
I would take Carson over the
I think so too. So Pete Prisco,
because I think you guys are bearing the lead here. This game proved one thing: it's that Sean McVay is a better coach than Doug Peterson.
Oh! Ooh. Suck it, Eagles fan!
Again,
Doug got dunked on.
Ho ho ho! Up high, down hard.
If we're valuing week two of the regular season over Super Bowl titles, then you are correct, Breach. You are correct. If that's how we're prioritizing.
Oh, I tell you what, our pal Blank is vindicated for his coaching list.
Bleep texts me. He's going to send me a check for bringing that up on the podcast.
By the way, whenever Breach dunks on someone, you have to play the Harlan, I hurt my leg.
After the long time punter and holder puts it down.
Oh, oh, that's not it. That's it.
What did you get
that? Oh, he missed. He missed. Oh, and he may have pulled a hamstring or a muscle.
What are you doing with Al Michaels on the soundboard?
That was the doink off the.
Oh, okay.
Something that doink.
But real quick, you know what's funny about that clip is that Harrison Butker tried a 30-yarder at the end of regulation, the Chiefs Chargers, and then all of a sudden, everybody on Twitter was like, "Don't pull a Randy Bullock, man! Don't grab your hammies."
I was gonna say that Prisco was texting. He's like, "Josh Allen's better than Deshaun Watson right now." And I was like, "What do you mean, like?" For their careers, or do you mean like for the first 2 weeks of the season? He's like, better right now. I was like, well, yeah. Josh Allen smoked the Dolphins and Jets. And
by the way, Josh Allen MVP pick is looking pretty good.
Did you pick him for MVP?
And our little conversations on the podcast over the summer.
Like, does Pete think the Bills would be 2-0 if they started the season against the Chiefs and the Ravens like Deshaun Watson did?
Right.
What?
And I think that's sort of my point is like with the Carson Wentz, Jared Goff thing is yes, and sort of defending Carson Wentz and Debo here, but like, yeah, Jared Goff looks like a better quarterback right now. Carson Wentz does not look good. I would have major concerns about Carson Wentz taking too many hits, holding onto the ball too long, turning it over way too much. I mean,
worst division in football is not even close, right?
That's the thing. If they're in the NFC West, you think that they're dead in the water, but because they're in the NFC East, I mean, it looked like the Cowboys were going to gag that, obviously, or lose that game to the Falcons. That one hurts the Eagles. But I mean, what's your panic level, Debo, on winning the NFC East?
So last week, my thing that I was holding on to after a tough week one loss to Washington was, okay, there's 7 playoff teams this year. After week two, it's okay, we play the Bengals next week. So that's what I'm holding on.
You know what's funny, Debo? I was literally going to ask you before we ended, stop talking about this game, that after getting your face kicked in by the Rams, what was your, on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that you can just walk in and show up and beat the Bengals?
It's not super high. I'd say it's still like a 7 or an 8, but it's not the 11 that I thought it would be 2 weeks ago.
And what's time in Carson Wentz's career that he's had multiple interception games in back-to-back weeks? Tyler Higbee, by the way, the first Rams player with 3 touchdowns since my boy Torrey Holt back in 06.
The Rams are good. McVay totally owns Jim Schwartz and for that matter, Doug Peterson today. But I think the Rams are actually a good team. The Eagles have not played well, but they're not dead yet because of the division they play in.
Hey, Breach, if Debo's at a 7 or an 8, what are you facing the Eagles feeling like?
At the beginning of the season, I would say a 1. But now that Joe Burrow's good and the Eagles look like trash, I'm going to say a 5. I think it's possible that they could pull off the upset, but they've lost 14 road games in a row and it's in Philadelphia, so more likely not.
Okay.
Hey, Debo, what did you think about the Philly, the crowd them playing the booze?
They were doing it all game, so I like how people picked on like the moment that Carson threw the interception, but. Well deserved. I would have booed if I was there. I think everybody would have booed if they were there.
No, it's just funny that they include the booze in the sound drops with the crowd.
Yeah, right? I think they need real booze to kind of motivate them because they're not motivated right now.
So, by the way, look, the Rams are legit. We agree on that?
Yeah. I think right now, as we sit here, the 49ers are the worst team in that division. That's not a slight. They've been injured.
Yeah.
But the Rams are... they're exceeding expectations for sure.
Yeah, and I think McVay's totally, we talked about this on the YouTube pick show that you should watch on YouTube, that I think McVay has totally revamped this offense. He learned from last year and saw how badly Goff was struggling when the offensive line couldn't protect him as well, and he just totally changed things around. He's moving more guys in motion. He's doing a little more sleight of hand to keep defenses from just sucking their ears back and going after Goff. And when Goff has time to throw, he is one of the better quarterbacks. He just so hasn't been good under pressure, and that's where his big flaw is. But he just hasn't faced a lot of pressure this year, and he's looked fantastic.
Yeah, I think I saw that they were number one in pre-snap motion after week one. And then they, I would assume that they are still pretty high up there after what they did in week two. Let's move along to Deshaun Watson, mentioned, and Lamar Jackson, who squared off in Baltimore and didn't know much of a game. Lamar Jackson blasted him. Ravens 33, Texans 16. The Ravens minus 7.5 covers the under 49.5 hits. Lamar Jackson, 19 fantasy points. Deshaun Watson, 16. And Mark Ingram, 13. The Texans are now 0-2 and have been blitzkrieged by probably the two best teams in football. So it's hard to really get a gauge on what they did. The Ravens are the first team to have four players rush for at least 45 yards in the same game since the Washington Redskins did it on November 1st, 1987 at Buffalo. How do we handle that, by the way?
You get charged $5.
Yeah, do you not call them the R-skins back then?
Just call them, you say Washington.
Yeah, the Washington. Yeah, that's
so the Washington football team forever.
No,
like,
they're
like so like the Washington football team won the Super Bowl?
The team formerly known as. But it, you just lost $5.
All right. $5?
I think it's what the swear pot is.
$5 feels steep for the swear pod.
I've got
That's
five.
Why you shouldn't be swearing.
I got $20. Just blow.
Lamar Jackson, 18 to 24, 204 yards and one touchdown. Also ran 16 times for 54 yards. Gus Edwards paced away. 10 carries, 73 yards. Not a whole lot in terms of aerial statistics for the Baltimore Ravens. That shouldn't be surprising because they had a huge lead the whole time. David Johnson, 11 carries, 34 yards. Deshaun Watson, 25 at 36, 275 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Brandon Cooks paced the way. Will Fuller injured, raising the question, why did you trade DeAndre Hopkins?
So LJ Ford scored a defensive touchdown for the Ravens. That defense is really good. Marcus Peters had a fantastic interception. You're watching the game and he materializes off screen and just makes an amazing grab. Again, I'm on the Jim Caldwell bandwagon when we talk about the Lions. I'm on the Marcus Peters bandwagon when we talk about the comparisons between him and Jalen Ramsey, in terms of all the money you pay Jalen Ramsey. Yes, Jalen Ramsey's amazing. Marcus Peters is a bargain and he balls out. One of the best cornerbacks last year, according to PFF, playing well this year. That defense is legit. And, we talk about Carson Wentz holding the ball forever. Deshaun Watson does that all the time. It is extremely frustrating. But again, if you trade someone like DeAndre Hopkins, who apparently is pretty good and he has no one to throw to, I guess you're going to hold the ball.
He held the ball last year a lot though, too.
That's true.
I just feel like, I don't know. Do we know what the Texans are?
Yes. They're not Billy O'Brien's team. They're not good, according to
me. Are they a bad team, or are they just a team that had to play the Chiefs and the Ravens? Because that's not a...
Well, we'll know more next week, because they go to Pittsburgh.
But if you're losing those games by a combined, 32 points, you're losing these games by 16 points on average, that tells you they're not good. You know, if they had played close games against these two teams,
right,
probably feel a little differently. But, yeah, I mean, Ryan, what's your confidence level with the Texans playing the Steelers next week?
I'm at a 5.5 as a Steelers fan.
What about as a person who just went 13-2 against the spread with his picks?
What do you think the spread will be? Probably 5.5?
Six.
Yeah.
Locked in.
I think, I don't know. I never feel comfortable taking the Steelers at home or on the road to cover, that is.
Six is a lot for that game. It feels like it's based primarily on how the Texans have looked.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think next week will tell us a lot. But to Breach's point, I mean, the Jets can lose by 16 points on average to those two teams back-to-back weeks as well. So that doesn't necessarily make you look great if you're Bill O'Brien.
The Texans have the Steelers, Vikings, Jaguars, Titans, Packers, and Jaguars again. How many wins do they get in those six games?
They're not beating the Jaguars. They're not sweeping the Jaguars. The Jaguars actually turns out, Gardner Minshew, he's pretty good.
Yeah. By the way, the opening series for the Texans was David Johnson run, David Johnson run. Third down, Deshaun Watson incompletion. And it's like, you really can't do that coming out.
Okay. You can if you're Billy O'Brien, because you're the coach and the general manager.
The Ravens are a monster, by the way. The Ravens are going to storm, destroy people. They have total continuity, great defense, great offense.
Brenton, it's funny you just said that, because I was literally, I'm looking at their schedule, and 38 points against the Browns, 33 against the Texans. If they beat the Chiefs, in week 3 on Monday night, I mean, when's their first loss?
Steelers, then the Bengals.
They've got Washington in week four, the Bengals in week five, the Eagles in week six, the Steelers in week seven.
I mean, those are all teams that are going to be picking in the top five of the draft.
And then a bye. So they're going to go to November undefeated if they beat the Chiefs.
Wow.
Go ahead.
You think they get the Steelers easily?
I mean, that's their closest game in there after the Kansas City game, but
it just depends. Like for a stretch, they would blow out the Steelers every game, and then last year Mason Rudolph almost beat them.
I'll say this: starting in that Steelers game, they get Steelers, Colts, Pats, Titans, Steelers, Cowboys.
Yeah, I don't think they're going undefeated.
Yeah, not going
undefeated. But right now, based on the way these teams have played through 2 weeks, next week they're playing the Chiefs. Is that right?
Yes, Monday Night Football.
I like the Ravens.
Sure. By the way, I point out again, first 3 to 4 weeks of the season, maybe even 4 to 6 weeks of the season, the teams with a lot of consistency are going to be taking care of business. And the Ravens, the Chiefs didn't do it as much, but the Ravens did it for sure.
Taking care of business every day.
What'd you say, Ryan?
Every day, right?
Oh, yeah. Then she was like, I don't know what she said.
We would never win.
Bucks 31, Panthers 17, the Buccaneers. Miracle cover, 7.5 on an Uncle Leonard Fournette jailbreak run, a meaningless touchdown run. They win by 14. The over also hits in a miracle. Leonard Fournette led the way in fantasy scoring, 23 points, Christian McCaffrey 19, and Mike Evans 16. Leonard Fournette was not the starter in this game. Ronald Jones was. Ronald Jones was playing very well, had a great stiff arm touchdown run, and then he fumbled a snap. And a handoff with Tom Brady, and he evaporated into thin air, and Leonard Fournette took over. Do we think that is permanent, and or what do we think of the Buccaneers in week two?
To answer your first question, yes. Bruce Arians totally feels like the type of coach who sees a fumble. This happens like in college. You'll see somebody grab by the face mask and point to the bench like, dude, you go sit there, you're done. And Arians feels like that type of coach. He's got that old school mentality. And maybe he would have been hesitant to do it before they signed Fournette. But now that he's on the team, Aaron's thinking, well, you know what? We've got a running back who's just as good as you, if not better. Maybe he doesn't know the offense as well, but he can learn it on the spot. And Fournette showed that, hey, he could be a weapon absolutely for Tampa Bay. And he's only going to get better because he's just going to know the offense better and better. So I think this is actually, if I'm another team in the NFC, it's a little scary to think Leonard Fournette in an offense with other weapons where teams aren't just focusing on him.
One of my takeaways is that Tom Brady had an interception, which wasn't a great throw, but it was the only target for Rob Gronkowski in that game. He was non-factor last week. And I'm starting to wonder, I mean, what do we do with Rob Gronkowski here? Is he going to get
Gronk's, Gronk's washed. He's away. Right? He's dissed.
Yeah. So he's out there and he's basically moral support for Tom Brady at this point. Like he's like,
it's like, he's like an entourage member.
He's Turtle.
Before, I mean, let's be honest.
Tequila.
You remember Gronk did that interview with CBS News like 5 months after he retired. He said he thought he had 20 concussions in his career. Like,
he said he had a hole in his thigh.
What is he even doing coming back? And that feels like he probably got in the football field and was probably thinking, this isn't the best idea, but I'm going to go through with anyway because Tommy's still out here playing at 43 years old.
I think part of it too is like it gives Tom Brady a comfort level.
Yeah, he's a service dog.
Jeez, Prince Turtle and a service dog.
No, service dogs serve very important roles and they're beloved. But I mean, he's not Rob Gronkowski from 5, 6, 7 years ago.
No, absolutely not. I also
think if he's drawing coverage, then he's doing his job.
He's not though. He got targeted once and it was an interception. I don't think that's doing your job unless you're playing a linebacker.
I'm not sure why you're coming after Gronk.
Wilson, my God. Do you hate Gronk? What's your thing with Gronk? Is because he didn't show up at your bachelor party?
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say that. My bachelor party was in Atlantic City, though. That's why he didn't go there.
I'm going to try and look up the snaps for Gronk. He can't have played that much, right?
No, I mean, it's in the scheme of things, it's not a big deal. It's just interesting because the trade was a huge development in the offseason because there was so much uncertainty about Tom Brady.
Well, I mean, it was a huge development in the sense that we were in a pandemic and they went out and got, I mean, look, here's the thing. We had our social media team and everybody's social media team. How are you going to stop this offense now? And it's like,
right.
Well, Gronk and Shady are washed. Like, well, don't include them, please. Like, give, Like, they're not the important part. I don't take a whole lot away from this outside of the fact that the Panthers defense is the worst in football. And the Buccaneers easily put up 31 points on them. I mean, easily. It was 21-0 in the second quarter.
I mean, don't misunderstand. This is a great game, bounce back game for Tom Brady. He was focused all week. It makes him feel better, given the way he played in week one, which wasn't terrible. They just lost the game to the Saints in New Orleans. So, yeah, I get all that. But I remember that play distinctly.
He wasn't that great. I mean, he's 23-35 against an awful defense. He was getting away with it. He was getting bailed out on some stuff. I would say if we give Tom Brady a C- last week, I'll give him a C+ this week.
I would give more than that last week.
You're a chump grader.
My other one, perhaps. He wasn't great last year. Like, it wasn't like 2007 Tom Brady. He was slightly above average on a team with not very many playmakers. Now, they have playmakers now, and he needs to play better.
I mean, Scotty Miller dropped an easy touchdown pass that he should have caught.
LeSean dropped one as well.
LeSean McCoy dropped a horrible one. LeSean McCoy dropped
a really bad one. Yeah, that's right. But, like, by and large, I don't think Brady was awesome. I think he was pretty good.
Yeah, and that's an upgrade from James.
And also, I think that part of it is that he's looks more comfortable in the offense. That's why you need a game like this. I mean, last week, he had zero chemistry with Mike Evans. This week, they connected 7 times for 104 yards and a touchdown. So it's about that, so that he's more comfortable in this offense, because the Buccaneers aren't going to get to the playoffs unless Brady's fully comfortable in this. And you could tell he was a little bit uncomfortable last week. This week, he looked a little bit better. I think he's going to get a little bit better each and every week. Yes. And, you know, they've got a friendly schedule, so that works out well for Brady. I mean, the Broncos, the Chargers, the Bears, those are all winnable games.
Those are for sure winnable. Those are good defenses, though. Yes. I'm not worried. I'm not going to panic on Tampa Bay as long as they're winning football games and staying in the playoff hunt and can get to midseason. I think that's when they'll start to click a little bit more. But these next 3 weeks, Denver at Denver, Chargers at home, at Chicago, I mean, those are not, you need to go 2-1.
They will.
Okay.
And I think, to your point, Brinson, if you're 2-0 and play two terribly crappy games, you're still 2-0. You have time to figure it out.
Sure. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. The Packers and Lions. Pete Prisco will not stop texting me about the Lions. He's like, great job.
My God.
Oh, he mentioned it on the halftime show on ASQ today.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. He said, some people pick the Lions to win. And Jamie said, who said that? Our friend Will Brinson. He couldn't wait to get it in.
40 Packers 42, Lions 21. It was a bloodbath. Lions are actually up 14-13 at one point. Packers cover 6.5. The over 51, one of our locks, hits as well. I was part of the Pick Six podcast parlay. Aaron Jones 40 fantasy points. Aaron Rodgers 22. Matthew Stafford 19. Devontae Adams, as we mentioned, suffered a hamstring injury. Aaron Rodgers said after the game, today's a game we expect to win. No, we don't have the home crowd, but we've had an advantage at home over the years. We were 7-1 at home last year. We've obviously been good in the division the last couple of years, haven't lost, but those are the type of games that you have to win. Aaron Jones, 18 carries, 168 rush yards, 3 total touchdowns, including 1 receiving and 2 on the ground, 236 total yards, the most by a Packer since Billy Houghton in 1956.
Start off by saying this, and then Breach, you can follow. Jim Caldwell got fired for going 9-7 in back-to-back.
Is Matt Patricia going to survive the season?
Well, Bob Quinn's not going to fire him. So
I don't think so either.
Yeah, but you have a younger owner in place who might just say, all right, I've had enough. This is embarrassing. We got to make a change. And you mentioned Aaron Jones fantasy points, Brinson. I'm only bringing that back up because – do you know who had Aaron Jones in fantasy today? Me. And you know why I'm bringing that up? Because I played you.
Me?
Yeah. Brinson. Yeah,
oh!
Yes.
In the Dunks and Blocks League?
In the Dunks and Blocks League.
Man, I don't care about fantasy this year at all.
That's because you keep losing.
Oh, he dunked you twice in one.
He's just not wrong. I mean, that's why I don't
care. Duck.
You know what's crazy, though? And you mentioned it, is that the Lions jumped out to that 14-3 lead, and I was watching most of the first half. I didn't see the entire second half.
Let me ask you, though, at what point did you think the Lions – did any point did you think the Lions –
14-13, I thought the Lions were going to win.
No, you did.
Oh, my God, you beat me by 3 points?
I still have 2 players left.
You have Hunter Renfrow and Drew Brees. Oh, that's tough. I benched Jonnu Smith for TJ Hockenson.
So go ahead. Did you think at 14-3 the Lions were going to win?
No, at 14-3, I thought the Lions could win because, look, they were two earned touchdowns. They drove 75 yards straight down the field on the Packers defense both times. Didn't have any issues. You know, sometimes that first drive, if a team goes straight down the field, it's a scripted drive. You can't really judge too much about what's going to happen in the rest of the game. But when they came out and did that on the second drive, in my head, I'm thinking – the Lions are either going to win this, or if they're going to lose, it's going to be like 45-42 because the Packers cannot stop them. And all of a sudden, I don't know if the Packers defense got a pep talk at the end of the first quarter, but something flicked and all of a sudden, boom, they got shut down. But it's amazing how the Lions can look good in tiny little spurts, but then be so bad.
So the Packers, got the ball first in the second half. So they were down 14-3 at the end of the first quarter. They score twice to take a 17-14 lead going into half. They get the ball first in the second half. Aaron Jones goes 75 yards untouched on the first play from scrimmage of the second half. They're up 24-14. And then on the very next possession, Matthew Stafford is picked six on a terrible throw. Terrible. And all of a sudden it's 31-14. And at that point, you're like, hey, this is probably over.
That's a wrap.
Yeah. And I mean, look, Aaron Jones had another touchdown, and obviously they got a field goal. Stafford had a touchdown as well that cut it to 13 points. But I mean, you know, you, in the blink of an eye, you go from, 17-14 in a good battle to 34-14, and you're sort of toast unless you're the Cowboys and playing the Falcons.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Not good.
The Lions are also like, I don't know if they're poorly coached. They're very banged up.
Every team is banged up.
No, the Lions are.
The 49ers are banged up, and they found a way to eke out a whooping on the Jets. I mean, let's not make excuses where.
Yeah, that's a little different.
Why? They traveled across country. Breach will tell you that traveling from west to east is not great for the team traveling west to east. What are you making faces for?
It's overrated.
They had Nick Mullins out there whooping up on Adam Gase and the Jets.
For an entire half.
I mean.
They didn't have Nick Bosa. They lost their starting quarterback. They lost their best running back. Their best tight end. Their best player didn't even play George Kittle.
What are you talking about the 49ers for? They played the Jets. Shut up. The Lions were out, didn't have Kenny Galladay, Joe Dahl, Big Hal.
Is the number two name on his list.
Two guys on the offensive line, cornerbacks Desmond Trufant, Justin Coleman, and defensive tackle Nick Williams. They were missing. They were down to nobody left at cornerback.
And that would have made a 3-touchdown difference.
Yeah, you know why there's no one left at cornerback? They traded Darius Slay to the Eagles.
That is a good point.
How bad if the Lions go like 0-4? They have a Week 5 bye. If they are 0-4 going into that bye, does Matt Patricia lose his job?
I don't think so.
I don't either. Who gets fired first, Dan Quinn or Matt Patricia?
The loser of that game when they play in Week 7.
Okay.
Ooh, loser leaves town match in Week 7. That is a Super Bowl matchup. All right, let's move on to the Colts 28, Vikings 11.
Ugh.
One of my best bets this week. The Colts cover the 3.5. The under 49 hits. That was a little surprising, but as I mentioned, it was a little unnerving to take this over since the possibility that the Vikings might be terrible exists, and it turns out that is correct. Jonathan Taylor paced the way in fantasy scoring 16 points, Phillip Rivers 12 points, Mo Alie-Cox 11 points, and as Debo points out in the rundown, you know who's back?
Billy Rivers?
Kirby Cousins!
Oh, Kirby is 100% back. I'll leave you with this stat, and then Breach, you can talk if you want to.
Can I name Kirk Cousins? Can I list his production real quick before you do that?
Yeah, do that.
Okay, so Kirby Cousins, excuse me. One point, I mean, he actually, yeah, it's terrible. 11 of 26 for 113 yards, 0 touchdowns, and 3 picks.
Through 3 quarters, his quarterback rating was 00. He finished at 15.9. I mean, he is full on in Kirby territory, and it's going to take a lot to get out of it.
Vikings' only touchdown was a fourth quarter Dalvin Cook run. He celebrated. He's like, yeah! It's like, dude, you're down 28-11. Stop it.
It was garbage time. And I know I said this last week after they lost to the Packers, but look, you get rid of your whole defense in an offseason, what do you expect? Offenses run all over you. And if you don't have a defense, guess who has to hold up the team? Your quarterback, And Kirk Cousins is not equipped to do that, especially when you trade away his best deep threat, Stephon Diggs. Cousins looks like he has no idea what he's doing out there right now. He looked bad last week. He looked even worse this week. Prince, you mentioned the three interceptions. And you know what? The Colts, on the other hand, looked decent last week, kind of had like two or three plays go against them, and that was kind of the difference in the game. And I really feel like Frank Reich went home, watched the film, and said, you know what? The only thing we need to change is let Phillip Rivers throw the ball less, and we will win. And that's exactly what they did.
Good strategy.
And they won.
Well, I think that it's a good strategy. I mean, like I was saying all along this offseason that I didn't want to see the Colts have Phillip Rivers throw 40 times. Like that shouldn't be the game. By the way, Phillip Rivers ain't washed. If you know, if you think that, you're wrong. He can make the, he can make all the throws he needs to make.
You want to hug your Phillip Rivers doll while you say that?
No.
He threw the ball 25 times, and that's to Breach's point. That's the whole idea. He can't be out there airmailing balls left and right because that's just not his game.
I mean, when you're winning, I mean, like they held the Vikings to 3 points all game long. The Vikings held the Vikings to three points.
They can't stop anyone, as Breach pointed out. And Kirk Cousins, I forgot about this. Someone last week after that first loss for the Vikings, pointed to a, Jay Gruden interview talking about Kirk Cousins. I think it was maybe over the summer, maybe last year at some point when they parted ways. And he said that Kirk Cousins will not throw the ball unless everything is perfect. Like everything has to be perfect for him to make that throw. And he says, well, that's never going to happen in the NFL because rarely is it perfect. He says it happens in practice. It was frustrating. And you sort of see that unfold. John pointed out Steph Diggs is gone. Well, if guys aren't getting open, you're just going to sit there and take a beating. And, you know, Kirby Cousins is Kirby Cousins it up.
So they opened up, with a field goal. They
went, was a perfect example of that. Sorry.
It's fine. They went 13 plays, 60 yards, 4 first downs, get a field goal on their first drive. Rivers throws an interception. You're thinking like, oh boy, this is going south. Here's what the Vikings did after that. I'm not going to include the Dalvin Cook touchdown. That was the final drive. After the field goal on the first drive. Punt, punt, safety, interception, 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 punt, punt, and touchdown. Right. Their longest drive in that stretch between their first and last drives was 22 yards.
Also not great.
That is unbelievably bad. They couldn't do anything. And so I get what you're saying about the formula and all that, but I don't think, and by the way, I mean, the Colts could have won this game 45-3. They kicked a very large number of short field goals where they were driving a long ways and then ultimately didn't make it down there. Like Rodrigo Blankenship had 28, 38, 38, and 44 in terms of his 4 field goals.
Shout out Rodrigo.
Yeah.
Woo, woo.
To the podcast.
Oh, God. All right, let's go.
Okay, Colts are good.
Gardner Minshew went 19 of 20 with 3 touchdowns against this Colts defense. Cousins did everything you said. I mean, it's embarrassingly
the
bad.
Vikings might be a bottom 10 team in the league. Bottom 5 team.
Yep.
Okay. Ryan just realized what time it is.
He just wants to move on so we can talk about the Steelers.
No, the defense stinks. Breach pointed out they traded away or got rid of everyone. They drafted 15 guys in defense. They're going to be terrible.
Most yards allowed in first 2 games of Vikings history, 876, ranks 3rd all time in 2020. That is not good.
Not great, Bob.
Steelers 26, Broncos 21. The Broncos cover the 6.5. The over 41 hits. Ben Roethlisberger, 22 fantasy points. Jeff Driscoll, 20 fantasy points. And James Conner, 17. Drew Lock, as we mentioned, knocked out with a shoulder injury. Jeff Driscoll came in. And Vic Fangio said, I thought in lieu of all the circumstances going against a good defense, I thought he did an admirable job. It'll only get better if we have to continue with him. That is not what you want to hear.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Driscoll actually, so he went down. I was like, first of all, I had to look up who the backup quarterback was in Denver. I was like, oh, Jeff Driscoll, they're going to crush him because they were actually giving Drew Lock a hard time. I think he was only there for 2 series. And I was like, yeah, you know what? Jeff Driscoll does a lot with a little, and he wasn't bad at all. He is a fine plan B if you need to go to him in case of emergency. And they had a chance to win that game. The reality is, like, they were getting smoked early. They came back. The Steelers had some turnovers. I think the upside is that unlike last year, the Steelers have a quarterback. He's not very mobile. He's 38 years old, but he can actually matriculate the ball down the field. And, once again, another week, another Chase Claypool highlight, 84-yard catch down the sidelines or a touchdown.
By the way, Drew Lock expected to miss 2 to 6 weeks with a sprained AC joint. It's his right shoulder. So I think I would bank on it being closer to 6 than 2.
He got demolished by Dupree. It didn't look good.
Let me ask you this, Ryan. Roethlisberger has just, I mean, obviously he threw for over 300 yards against the Broncos defense. but I feel like he's looked a little off the first 2 weeks. Do you think it's Russ because, hey, he just sat out a year? Or do you think it's because he's 38 years old and he's on the tail end of his career?
I think it's 65% Russ, 35%
Heat. Interesting that you would prop up Big Ben if you're trying to say that Rivers is washed.
I was all over Rivers.
Big Ben has two Super Bowl rings. Rivers has...
They're the same age. We're not talking about their careers. We're talking about where they are right now.
Yeah, but...
He's like, oh, it's just rust for the guy with the Tommy John surgery who's 39. He's like, Rivers is toast. He's done.
Rivers has played... He played games last season. Roethlisberger sat out of football for a year.
He didn't play games because he had surgery on his right arm.
And by the way, Roethlisberger had a better season last year than Phillip Rivers.
That's fair. don't you think it's possible that maybe, I don't know, the surgery on his right elbow maybe causing some of the rust?
Yeah, of course. But I think he's getting better. I think he was rusty in the first quarter and a half on Monday night, and then against a terrible Giants defense, played better. He flashed at times this on Sunday. He had a terrible interception. Benny Snell had an even worse turnover fumble that kept the Broncos in it. The Broncos D played really well, and their offense did pretty good too.
The Steelers should have won this game like 20-3.
Yeah, 100%. Jerry Jeudy is dynamic. Courtland Sutton was on and off the field, I think, with the hammy aggravation. Jerry Jeudy was electric.
Yeah. Noah Fant was awesome too.
Noah Fant's going to be, oh, he's so good.
The Broncos have pieces.
Yeah.
They ain't getting there this year.
The whole conversation in August was, okay, can Drew Lock hold this group together? Then, Von Miller got hurt and Drew Lock is, you know, he's hurt and he was sporadic before that.
Ben Roethlisberger passed, Eli Manning from all time touchdown passes in this game.
Yeah.
He's behind Phillip Rivers. There you go, Brenton.
He's like 25 back of Phillip Rivers. He's never catching Rivers. He's not.
If Rivers retires first, did you ever think about that?
Rivers won't retire first.
He has 10 kids.
Exactly. Yeah,
would you retire if you had 10 kids? No. You'd be like, you know what? I'm going to sign up for a 40th season. All right, let's move along. 49ers 31, Jets 13. 49ers covered the -7. The over 41.5 hits. Thanks to a garbage Jets touchdown. Jimmy Garoppolo, 17 fantasy points. Jordan Reed, 17 as well. Jordan Reed, 2 touchdowns. Raheem Mostert, 16.
Great catches. George Kittle's not there because of the knee sprain, and Jordan Reed acts like it's 5 years ago. Fun to watch.
Yeah. Jimmy Garoppolo hurt. Raheem Mostert hurt. Nick Bosa, torn ACL. Brutal for the 49ers who now have to come back to the same stadium and play the Giants next week. Can this team stay afloat with all the injuries that are happening right now? We don't know.
Their schedule, actually, John probably has in front of them next week, obviously the Giants. And I think the 3 games after that, they have a good chance of winning before they open up division play. So they got to stack wins against crappy teams.
Giants, Eagles, Dolphins, Rams, Patriots, Seahawks.
Wilson just called Debo's team a crappy team.
My inside thought, I said it outside.
Their next 3 teams are playing are combined 0-6.
Right. So they got to stack wins is my point. Maybe the Eagles play them tough. Maybe the Eagles get it together. They're both injured teams. But before you get to division play, which is the best division in the NFL, you got to win some football games with your banged up team.
But also being this banged up and this injured is bad because they have a late bye. Their bye is not till week 11. So they're going to have to survive the next 8 weeks. And you have all these guys, you know, you mentioned the players that got hurt in the game, but you also have George Kittle, Richard Sherman. You have these important players, who weren't healthy for this game, and we don't know when they're going to be healthy. So, yeah, it does feel like that the upcoming schedule with the Giants, Eagles, and Dolphins, you have to win those because after that stretch.
If you go 1-2 in that stretch, you are toast.
After that stretch, they have the Rams, the Patriots, the Seahawks, the Packers, and the Saints all in a row. I mean, that is rough.
Then followed by the Rams, the Bills, the Washington football team, the Cowboys, Cardinals, Seahawks.
That's
a hard schedule. I don't think this team's making the playoffs.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that I would imagine that the rest of the division mates.
I sort of think you have to go 3-0 in this stretch. 2-1 ain't going to cut it.
Yeah, I think 3-0 too.
Yep. I don't disagree.
That's going to be hard. Look, if anybody can do it, it's Kyle Shanahan. But I mean, like, Nick Bosa is a massive loss for that defense.
Yep.
I mean, George Kittle probably not going to be back. I mean, they're...
Wait, what do you mean? George Kittle's coming back.
He'll be back, but I just mean, like, we don't know if he'll be back, like, next week.
Oh, next week, yeah. Well, you got to qualify. Scare some people, I think.
Yeah, my bad. I mean, I just think it's going to be... This is tough sledding for a banged-up This roster is really banged up.
I want to see what happens with this turf situation, because we've seen in the past, like 20 years ago, Bill, what was his name? What was the Ravens coach? Brian Billick dragged his team off the field in a preseason game. He said, we're not playing the Ravens on this piece of crap turf. So we'll see. You know, we talked about the week one game, no issues there. Obviously, Shanahan feels differently. They have to play there again on Sunday.
The one thing I will ask you guys, that's what I want to ask Brinson.
How long?
We just mentioned all the banged up players, and the Jets still lost by 18 points. The 49ers were basically running out their JV squad, and they still won 31-13.
And it should have been 31-6.
Yes.
You know,
I think that leads to Brinson's question.
Okay. Well, I have two questions. One, what was more embarrassing for the Jets?
Yes.
A, giving up a first down.
This is a great stat.
A first down on a 3rd and 31 to a 55-yard rush. Or B, letting Frank Gore in the year 2020 of our Lord carry the ball 21 times. What's worse?
The A is worse.
Yeah.
And it's worse because it wasn't even a 32-yard gain. It was a 55-yard gain.
The 49ers were actively disinterested in picking up the first down.
And it wasn't a pass play. It was a run play. I mean, the chances of that play having any success must have been the lowest probability play that actually was successful in the history of tackle football. It goes back to one overarching theme, the coaching. We just talked about the 49ers with four players went in there and whooped up on a team that was relatively healthy, and they never had a chance. Sam Darnold is sort of a luckier version of Josh Rosen in that he gets to play, but he's going to get jettisoned as soon as the spring rolls around and Trevor Lawrence becomes available, because he doesn't have a chance.
You know what's crazy about that?
If I'm a team to give up a first down on 3rd and 30 or longer since 1999.
If I'm a team, I'm actually taking a chance on Sam Darnold. I feel like Josh Rosen has never looked that great on the field, but I feel like Darnold has definitely shown flashes of being good, but he is just being wasted away. And how long does Adam Gase last? You can't keep losing these insane games. Like, the 49ers dressing 10 players and they're still beating you by 3 touchdowns. That's embarrassing.
I don't know what. Do they fire him midseason?
How else do you get rid of him? What do you do? Lock the door?
Fire him after the year? I mean, he got a vote of confidence from Christopher Johnson last week.
I feel like the vote of confidence is usually a bad thing.
Yeah, that's true.
They also have a week 11 bye. Their next 3 games, Colts, Broncos, Cardinals. How many they win?
0. This is the worst team in football by large margin.
And then the Chargers, then the Bills, then the Chiefs, then the Patriots, then the Dolphins. Maybe they beat the Dolphins?
Maybe. I mean, I
want to go in 16.
I want to apologize to the Jaguars for thinking they were the worst team in football. That's
honest. It's not even close.
Not even close.
Thank you for complimenting the Bengals, because if the Jets are the worst, that means the Bengals aren't.
I mean, I would rather, like, having to watch the Jets play 16 games would be awful.
The Bengals would beat the Jets 7 times out of 10.
That seems low. Yeah. Bills 31, Dolphins 28. It was over under first, over under week 7. Adam Gase gets fired.
I think over.
I think he'd survive till the bye.
Yeah.
Okay. Bills 31, Dolphins 28. The Dolphins cover the plus 5.5. The over 42.5 easily hits. So much surprising. There's a lightning delay in this game. Top fantasy performers, Josh Allen, 41 points. Ryan Fitzpatrick, 26 points. Mike Gesicki, 19 points. Allen passed 417 yards with 4 touchdowns and 0 picks for a 147 passer rating. Allen, with that, who has passed for 729 yards, 6 touchdowns and 0 interceptions in the first 2 weeks of the 2020 season, is the 4th quarterback with at least 700 passing yards, 6 TDs and 0 picks through his team's first 2 games of a season in NFL history. He joins Tom Brady in 2015, Patrick Mahomes in 2019, and Peyton Manning in 2013. He is also the first player in Bills history with 400 pass yards, 4 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions in the game. So, guys, has Josh Allen taken the leap?
Let me ask you this. Let me put it this way to you guys. Through 2 weeks, who is your MVP? I have 2 candidates.
All right, there's 3 candidates, I think.
All right, go name them.
The Russell Wilson, Josh Allen, and Kyler Murray.
Those are my 3. I somehow forgot.
And Aaron Rodgers, I guess you could throw it as a fourth.
I think he's four. I think he's not a distant four, but I think he's four.
Yeah, and then like Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, you would.
And Patrick Mahomes didn't play great in week two.
Yeah, it's fine. Lamar.
Mine's Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's going to take Russell Wilson, but like Josh Allen has a pretty viable case right now.
Yep. He and Kyler, I think, are right. They're not right there, but if Russell Wilson was out of the equation, I think it's down to those two.
I think Russell's played better teams and the Seahawks are averaging.
Well, I mean, we don't need to debate. The point is that Josh Allen is
that's
in the
mix. Oh, argue Stein over here is trying to, I mean, yes, Russell Wilson's better.
You asked me who my MVP is through 2 weeks. I was trying to answer. Prince has given you a list. I gave you one name.
I just wanted two words.
Oh, okay. You should have specified.
All right. Go ahead about Josh Allen being great.
Me?
Yeah.
Let's give you a bunch of stats.
I will say the one thing about Josh Allen, and he's really turned the page because everybody, the whole question was, can Josh Allen take the next step? Before the 2020 season started, he had never had a 300-yard game in his career. Boom. He picks that up in week one. Now he has a 400-yard game. It is really insane how far he has come along. And not only that, he still missed a couple of easy throws. Like he's still leaving stuff on the table. So he hasn't even tapped out at what his potential is. And so he is going to like, so he's only going to get better. And that's what it feels like here. But the only caveat here is that they've played the Dolphins and the Jets. So I don't know that we know fully how good he is because they're going to get tested this week against the Rams. That's going to be completely different from playing the Dolphins or the Jets, who we called the worst team in football. You know, their defense has actually been the biggest surprise for me this year, as far as
the Bills
go, because it hasn't been that good. And we expected so much more from them. And so, you know, they gave up 28 points to the Dolphins. What's going to happen with the Rams? I don't know, but the Rams have put up 40 points.
And the Jets scored like 20 points on them too, didn't they?
Yeah, 17. So, I mean, but it's still more than, you know, the Jets.
Or you would expect the Jets to score against an elite defense.
Exactly. So it's been interesting that the defense has been kind of the letdown here and Josh Allen's been carrying the team.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's what I pointed out to Prisco when he was talking about it. I was like, look, man, I'm not knocking Josh Allen. Josh Allen looks like he may have taken a step forward. And this is the whole thing is if Josh Allen can take a step forward, the Bills are a Super Bowl contender and can win the division. I would still favor the Patriots to win.
I was going
to
say after what we saw on Sunday night in New England, in Seattle, even though New England lost, I would imagine the Patriots are like, why is Cam Newton on that team? Because if it's Jared Stidham or Brian Hoyer.
The Bills are like that.
The Bills are like that.
The Bills are like, are you kidding me? Why didn't we just sign Cam?
Yeah.
Yep. Cardinals 30, Washington football team 15, a total beat down in the desert. Perfect. Cardinals covered the -7, ruined Ryan's perfect day against the spread.
Yep.
Under 46.5 hits. Kyler Murray, 33 fantasy points. Terry McLaurin, 18. Dwayne Haskins, 12. DeAndre Hopkins said after the game that there was never a doubt in our mind that we would start like this. This team in the locker room we have is a lot of veterans, a lot of good young guys. To be 2-0 is what we expected.
Do you feel like every time he says something, he's directing it directly at Bill O'Brien?
Absolutely. This is the first time the Cardinals have been 2-0 since 2015 when they went to the NFC Championship game. Hopkins, 8 catches, 68 yards, and a touchdown. He has 22 catches this season, the most in NFL history in a player's first two games with the team. Kyler Murray, 26 of 38, 286 yards and a touchdown, 67 rush yards, 67 rush yards and two rushing touchdowns. He is unbelievable in the open field. I mean, unbelievable. One of those touchdowns, he was looked like Dante Hall.
He broke Dante Hall. He was the human joystick 2.0. He broke whoever that poor soul's ankles were like three times.
Yeah.
And he's just, no shame in it. Like, yeah, I understand why your ankles broke on that because videos.
Yeah, you don't even get mad at him for it.
No. And, you know, we talk about it every week. Once again, he does a great job of not taking hits. And I think that is critical to his longevity.
The Cardinals are legit. You can bash me for the Lions all you want. I think I was right on the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And I would also say that the one thing that Kyler Murray showed was that how much of a pain in the butt it is to stop a mobile quarterback. Because remember, we saw Washington last week. Carson Wentz was just a sitting duck back there. He doesn't move around like Kyler Murray. He can't even run 1/10 as fast as Kyler Murray, and he got beat up. Well, Washington went in there, thought they were going to do the same thing, and I know Kyler did get sacked 3 times, but most of the time he was escaping and then either taking off and picking up big yardage or making something crazy happen. And so I just don't think teams, I mean, that's why we're seeing Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, all these super athletic passers or runners who also are very good passers are taking over. And that's, there's just no way to stop these guys.
Yep, I agree. Terry McLaurin's still awesome. He's the only playmaker on that team.
Yeah, and I mean, that his touchdown pass, Terry McLaurin finished the day with 125 yards and a receiving touchdown. The touchdown came in garbage time, so I'm not going to bang Pat Peterson too much for
all right.
Jaguars, Titans 33, Jaguars 30, my fantasy, my survivor teams move on. The Jaguars plus 7 covers over 44.5. Ryan Tannehill, 34 fantasy points. Gardner Minshew, 28. Jonnu Smith, 20. Are the Jaguars good?
They're not terrible, and they got rid of every player on their team. Again, you were trying to defend the Lions. I mean, the Jags have traded everyone away.
The 49ers didn't get hurt. They got rid of them all.
49ers had 4 players dressed. We've been through this, and the Jaguars show up. Gardner Minshew is a huge part of it. 19 to 20 last week, as Breach pointed out. 30 of 45 on Sunday. 3 more touchdowns. They had a chance to win this game. The Titans jumped out to the lead, but then they battled back and they had a chance, to make something happen. They didn't. They covered. I won my little bet, so I'm good.
Yeah. And I do think that Minshew's a lot better than everyone expected. I think a lot of people thought last year was a fluke. All of a sudden, they're thinking, hey, this guy has jorts. He's a mustache. He's not going to be good. He throws it over the mountains like Uncle Rico. But guess what? He threw it over the mountains with accuracy. And you look at their schedule coming up. They have the Dolphins, the Bengals, the Texans, and the Lions before they get to a bye. They could win every single one of those games.
He's too good to let them get Trevor Lawrence.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's right, because they're going to win football games.
Right. They're going to win 5 or 6 football games this year, I think.
But just about every other team except for the Bengals, should they have the first overall pick, whether it's the Redskins, obviously the Jets.
$5!
$6.
Oh, my goodness.
That's 6 times. $30. Unbelievable. All right, go ahead.
But forget Minshew for a second. I'm going to talk about the other quarterback here, Ryan Tannehill, because he is the player who impressed me the most in this game. Look, we knew going into the season, people were just going to say, you know what, we're going to shut down Derrick Henry, and we're going to see if Ryan Tannehill can beat us, and he's going to have to prove that last year wasn't a fluke. He was on fire in this game. He made some fantastic throws, yeah. Ended up throwing 4 touchdown passes. Jonnu Smith has been a total weapon for him. I think the first drive, they connected 2 times for like 65 yards, and Tannehill, just every time he had to make a big throw, he did. He went 18 of 24, 239 yards. And Jacksonville couldn't really put any pressure on him. He only got sacked once. He'd always find a little way to escape. He doesn't have like the Minshew magic where he's scrambling for 15 yards after he escapes, but he gets out of trouble. And, you know, if you're a quarterback, the 2 things you don't want to do is turn the ball over or take a sack for a loss. And Tannehill doesn't do that.
That touchdown pass to Adam Humphries was an absolute dime. He's getting just crushed in the pocket, throwing it like basically with the all arm strength. And he throws it almost like across the field into a streaking Humphries who's like got 3 guys converging in on him. And it, I mean, just a beautiful throw. This game was really close. Like the Titans defense, I think, is a problem because they couldn't slow down Denver at all.
In week one,
and we're sort of like, it's week one. Like, what are you going to do? And then, I mean, Minshew and company were moving the ball all over the place on him.
Maybe that's where Minshew, I don't know. It's an incredible story. I will say this. Do you know who is probably most excited after Ryan Tannehill about the way Ryan Tannehill's playing? Sam Darnold. Because once he gets out from Adam Gates' thumb,
he's going to be a superstar.
He's
going to jump
Sam Darnold?
The Patriots.
No, Steelers are going to get Sam Darnold.
That touchdown pass you mentioned to Adam Humphries, that was on a 3rd and 9. That's a key part there because that if he doesn't get it, it's a field goal. Field goals are a coin toss in Tennessee, so who knows what happens.
At best.
So, yeah, that made the throw even crazier.
Crazy that they had 2 different double-digit leads and still, like, they were tied with the Jaguars a minute and 40, a minute and 50 seconds left. Steven Gostkowski made a 49-yard field goal, and then they picked off Minshew on like the first play of the next drive to seal it. But I mean, yeah, the defense for Tennessee's just been involved and they just allowed people to score on them. I think that's a bit of a concern. Jacksonville is just going to be involved in shootouts.
Yeah.
The defensive defense has come up with big plays when they had to come up with them.
They're just not stopping anybody, didn't feel.
And you know what? They get to play the Vikings next week, so that should fix all their problems.
They're going to route them. Bears 17, Giants 13, the final game. Giants miraculously cover plus 4.5. The under 42.5 hits. David Montgomery, 18 fantasy points. Mitchell Trubisky, 16. Deion Lewis, 11. Ugh. Saquon Barkley, of course, tore his ACL. The Bears are 2-0. And the Giants appear to be just a gosh darn awful football team. They try hard, though, so Joe Judge has that going for them.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a lot of that game with our resident Giants fans, and they were very frustrated even before Saquon got hurt. Once Saquon went out, they actually played a little better. It had nothing to do with Saquon's injury. It's just I think they had played so poorly up to that point, they had no choice but to play better. Daniel Jones holds the ball too long. He makes bad decisions. He fumbles the ball. He shows glimpses of being good. But
he had a bad day at the office.
It has to be more consistent. I mean, Mr. Trubisky, again, he played well the second half in week one. He started strong and then threw some interceptions. He's playing just well enough to get that extension.
I told you he's getting that contract. He's getting it.
I think you're right. Joe Musso is an anchor, and he's a huge Bears fan. And he's like, I don't think they should do it. He's like Sean, the guy, you should five more bucks for me. Who says you can't do it, but you're going to do it. I mean, that's how he's playing. Mr. Trubisky going to get you to 8 wins. I think you have to pay him 30.
You get the playoffs, Mr. Trubisky's getting a $30 million extension.
I'd love to hear it.
18 to 28, 190 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks for Mitch from MVP Mitch. Not a great game. David Montgomery ran the ball pretty well. I was shocked Allen Robinson didn't have a huge game. Shocked.
He got targeted 9 times, right?
Yep, 9 targets, 3 catches, 33 yards. I don't know why he wants to sign an extension in Chicago. Danny Dimes, 25 of 40, 241 yards, 0 touchdowns, 1 interception. They had a chance to come to win the game late, and I mean,
well, the funny thing is that Danny Dimes has his ardent defenders who insist that he is a franchise quarterback. But what we were just saying, what I just say about Ryan Tannehill, that the two things quarterbacks can't do, don't turn the ball over, don't take sacks. Now, I understand the Giants offensive line is absolutely horrible, so you're going to take a sack occasionally, and Danny Dimes did here. He got sacked 4 times, but he also turned the ball over twice. He threw an interception. He lost a fumble. The man is a fumbling machine. I think he set the record for most fumbles per game last year. You just stop fumbling. That's something that you can control. You literally are. That's the one thing in football. You as a player, if you are holding the football, don't fumble the ball, and he keeps fumbling. I don't know how you can be comfortable with a quarterback back there who might fumble it on any play. He's touching the ball, and he touches the ball on every play.
I will say, I think he will in the long term be fine, but I think Dave Gettleman will have long been fired. And don't forget, Ryan Tannehill wasn't great on and off for many years until he sort of found his way to Tennessee. But
that was with Adam Gase.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of issues facing Daniel Jones. And in a different situation, he's probably better. But, hey, it is what it is, and he's not playing well.
Daniel Jones has the most turnovers per game of any quarterback in the Super Bowl era.
Jeez, that's
not great.
Among players in their first 5 seasons.
You're not winning football doing that.
That is not good. Okay, so let's get to some winners and losers. Give me a winner for the week, Wilson.
I'm going to say the New England Patriots. And you might say, wait, they got smoked. They didn't get smoked. They lost by 5 points on the road in Seattle last minute play. But Patriots fans are looking and going, oh, my gosh, we have a quarterback. No one else wanted this guy. We thought his foot was hurt. We thought his shoulder was hurt. He is healthy. He is awesome. He's almost over 400 yards. We are going to win not only the division, we're going back to the Super Bowl.
My winner is Harrison Butker because he's amazing. That's it. He hit 2 58-yard field goals, and the Chiefs usually the Chiefs are blowing everybody out, so it doesn't matter. The Chiefs needed every point he had, plus he hit that bonus 58-yarder, didn't even count. Good for you, Harrison Butker. You're the butt kicker of the week for me.
Breach is butt-kicking butt kicker. My winner is Josh Allen. People, I mean, look, Pete Prisco is going to be peacocking about him all week long. There's a bunch of people with Josh Allen MVP tickets that got laughed at. Like, that can't happen. And Bills fans, I have no doubt, will be thrashing me on Twitter once again. Apparently, I bashed their that trash, you know, that food they do, like the trash
garbage plate.
I wrote my picks column. I must have been up, like, having some beers. And I was like, this, like, you want to watch this game? You don't want to watch this game. Like, I'd really like stare at like whatever that crap local delicacy that Buffalo has. And like, it got on a Bills message board and they all came after me on Saturday. But I'll Josh Allen, big winner. I mean, like, you know, Bills get to Peacock. Pete gets to Peacock. Josh Allen gets the Peacock. How about a loser, Wilson?
The Falcons special teams coach, the coaching staff, the players, the organization. That cannot happen. Forget the NFL. It can't happen at any level. That's it. Very disappointing. The Falcons lost that football game.
The Falcons are going to be my loser, and they probably should be. It should just be unanimous. But since we don't want to have all the same answers, I will just go with Jets fans. Like, imagine being a Jets fan right now and sitting through this and watching a 49ers team that has 14 healthy players beat your team by 18 points. I mean, that's low. It's embarrassing. I would love to know what Byron Ed is thinking right now. It's not good.
I was going to say Adam Gase, but instead I'll go Kirby Cousins. You can add Mike Zimmer to that. Add a whole bunch of people. Gary, by the way, sneaky winner too, Jamal Adams.
Yeah, good game.
Well, not on the Jets.
Also that.
I think Kirk Cousins. I mean, how can he, if he plays like that, how long will Mike Zimmer let him stick around? They just sent him to extension.
I feel like Zimmer has never been completely happy with Cousins on the team.
I agree with you completely. He doesn't want it to be a Cousins team.
That's a bad news for you, Mike.
All right, that's the recap pod. We stay up at 2 a.m. We stay up till 2 a.m. so you don't have to. Remember, watch our show 4 p.m. Eastern time, less than 14 hours away from now on CBS Sports HQ. In those 14 hours, Ryan Wilson will drive to a hotel, sleep, and drive back to his house. It'll be a fun Monday, Ryan.
Ready? I got to do a mock draft tomorrow, too, before the show. So,
forward to that. All right. That's the show. Talk to you guys later.